going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
I love Carter. I mean, wow. And I like the aggressive nature of the Giants pursuing somebody at a position that they need to address. My only concern is the execution was either rushed or not fully thought out. And I just went through this before, you know, starting with the Stafford flirtation. Well, that wasn't even a flirtation. That was just straight up begging. How much a year? Yep, we'll give it to you. Like Stafford, they wanted Stafford big time. And then, you know, flirted with Rodgers, kicked the tires. Obviously, Russell Wilson comes in. Then they offer up a pretty sizable trade package for Cam Ward. I like Jackson Dart. I do. I think many of you are maybe misinterpreting what I'm saying, which I can't help. I mean, it is what it is, and that's fine. I'm not here to disparage the young man. I'm not saying he can't succeed. I'm not saying he doesn't have good traits that I think some of which are transferable, if not all of them, transferable to the NFL. What I'm saying is I'm a little confused by how the Giants got there. That's it. From the Jets' perspective, this was the player that I wanted. Don't get me wrong. Of course, I was, you know, kind of thinking about Ty Warren, maybe even the receiver. But I just knew that, I strongly thought that Aaron Glenn wanted to go in this direction. And I myself felt that this is the best way to build the Jets from the engine out. You know, we're always chasing the shiny objects, and that's great. You know, if the car, you know, looks like $1 million, but it's not great if it runs like it's, you know, $1.50. And too often, you know, we have been fooled and betrayed and completely misguided in what we think the Jets could be or what they are because we never lift up the hood and actually look at the inner operations of the team. Well, when you start to do it now with the Jets and their 5 offensive linemen, all of whom are young, not one of them's 27. Not one of them's older than 27. 60% of those guys are first-round picks, and they're all nasty. Like, they're mean, and they're athletic. So I think it's very obvious what the identity of the Jets is, right? And this is a good thing. Like, again, as much as I kind of question how the Giants got to where they got with Dart, the one thing I can say about both of these teams that has been lacking forever is that, to me, the identities are very clear, very apparent. The Jets are going to be a tough, you know, shove it down your throat, run it 30-something times a game. That counts Justin Fields, obviously, and try to win that way. And the Giants, of course, the Giants are going to try to score, and their defense and their offense will be better than it was a year ago. But the Giants' defense is going to pin its ears back, and they are just going to annihilate you. I can't wait to watch the Giants' defense. I am really high on that. And I've been saying that for a while. Like, you think about now Abdul Carter, and you watch the tape, and he's jumping around from spot to spot. You know, his pursuit skill from the weak side, he's not just, listen, it's nice to just put your hand in the ground and beat somebody one-on-one. That's awesome. But and I'm not going to say there's a lot of guys who could do that because it's still a pretty rare trait, and it's a commodity that's very valued in the NFL. But if you can do that, which he can, but you could also bust it from 15 yards away and blow up a play, which he can, now you could deploy him anywhere. And guess what? That makes Burns better and Thibodeau better. and Sexy Dexy better. I just think the Giants defense is going to be fun. So there you go. A good night. A little perplexed at how the Giants got there. Not crushing the player, just questioning the method or the methodology to get there. BT and Sal on the Fan on this Friday. It's 12:05. Let's get back to the calls. No, I have figured out how to do this. We'll get to that later. Let's see. I think I figured it out. Here we go. Dave is in Middlebury, Connecticut. What's up, Dave?
Hey, good morning, my friend. Hey, I appreciate your commentary. It's a little bit tamer from the fireworks from the morning crew.
Oh, they were fired up today. They're usually not fired up.
Gee, you know,
I think it's good. I got to tell you, fired up Gio's not a bad thing once in a while. He was, I was
entertaining.
He was nuts today. I love it. There you go.
Yeah, very good. I agree with you. You know, long time Giants fan, season ticket holder for years. You know, listen, this is what Dable wanted, right? And I think at the end of the day, you know, everybody that has to take, you know, you don't know. It's a crapshoot draft. Everybody knows that.
Yep.
I do think this, though. One thing you did comment on earlier, which was, you know, is he going to get practice? Listen, I think Dable wanted this kid. They moved up to get him. He's going to work this kid in practice. I don't know that he's going to play this year. I agree with you there. But I think for at least for Dable,
yeah,
you know, it checked all the boxes. And I think the Giants, like you said, I completely agree with you. The identity is going to be the defense. And listen, who are we kidding? We never had anybody that was a superstar, even at the quarterback position for a very long time. Our identity, going back to the Bill Arnsberger days, was a good defensive team. You'd win games ugly, 17-13, even during the Parcells era.
Yep.
And so the Giants have, and I agree with you completely, I appreciate that comment wholeheartedly, an identity now again. And I think that's what Carter brings to the team. And I think that, and Dable's satisfied, and, you know, whether it's the Ole Miss thing, I don't care less about all that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just what Dable's going to go down with the ship. It's his guy. He wanted this guy. And you're right. We whiffed on all the other things, you know, from Rodgers, going back to Ward, and even as far as, you know, the ship that sailed losing to the Colts, you know what I mean?
And by the way, Dave, sometimes by whiffing on things that you may have or may not have, but maybe would have wanted in the past, and thanks for the call, maybe you get lucky. Like, listen, we could talk about the great franchises, and there's a commonality there. You know, it's a thought process. It's a continuity to that thought process, but it's also an ability to evolve with the different, whether it's in analytics or different trends, whatever it might be. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why certain franchises are just consistently good. They have good people, smart people, adaptable people. They draft well. They develop well. You look up 10 years, not that you win in 10 Super Bowls, but you're probably going to the playoffs 8-9 times, and you probably have a Super Bowl or two. And we know who those teams are. And then conversely, we know what the bad teams and what their commonality is. And it's complete turnover. And in certain situations, it's like a lack of harmony, like with the Jets over the years, and like at the end of the Coughlin situation with Mara, you know, like that is dysfunctional that generally escapes the quality teams. And if it does permeate their building, they snuff it out quick. Like think about the end, you know, I'm not here to knock around Odell Beckham Jr., but think about how long they let him get away with some of those charades. Like, and I'm not saying he was more of an answer than the problem, but that's a bit of a microcosm of how the Giants lost their way. Including Coughlin, who I've got profound respect for as a man, as a leader, as a coach, as an American. Like, I love Tom Coughlin. But Tom Coughlin lost his fastball by letting, you know, Odell kind of run the show. And there's a doing all those dopey things, pretending he's peeing in the end zone against Philly, against the hydrant. Like, come on, man. Then that to me was the onset of the thread being pulled from the sweater of the Giants. And every year that thread got pulled and, you know, you got less and less sweater. Well, you know, at least right now it feels stable. It feels like there's a vision and it feels like there's a continuity to that vision, which is good. Now, they may have wanted other things before they actually got Jackson Dart. And I told you, and you know what they were, we ran through it a million times, five different players. But that doesn't mean all five would have been better options than Dart. It just means I'm a little confused by how they got there. But I would also push back. I don't know where he's getting the reps from. Honestly, I don't know if Boomer said this, and I was thinking it. Like, I'm like, man, what are they going to do with Jameis? And then Boomer's like, you might have to cut him. And Gio was like, cut him. And, like, I can understand why Greg had that reaction. But as soon as Boomer said that, even before that, I was thinking that. And, like, I'm going to stand on that. I don't think you get rid of him because he's not a good guy. Like, I don't think you need him. What do you need him for? What's he going to do? I mean, if you had Drew Locke around, all right, you know, Drew Locke, he's not going to play. Who cares what he thinks, you know? But Russ is the starter. You're going to really relegate Jameis to the third spot? And if you do, is he going to be okay with that? I would just cut him. I would really cut him. If you believe that much in Dart. And you just go into the season, Russ is the starter. Maybe even if you do DeVito as the two for like a week or so, and then boom, all right, DeVito, you can stick around. But now Dart's getting the whatever reps remain from Wilson, they're going to Dart. Like, they can't go to Jameis Winston is my point. That doesn't do anything for the Giants. I'm sure they thought about that, though. Let me get Joe and Corum. Joe, BT and Sal, what's up, Joe?
Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
You got it, buddy.
I've been a Giants fan since 1963. Okay, so I've seen it, heard it all. Mm-hmm. I was in the bar business. We owned a couple of bars, so you heard guys before sports talk radio. And the one thing I'll say is Mara is Mara. And I think he had a lot to do with this decision for Dart. They've had a certain profile for the quarterbacks that they like, and I think that continued. I think the Stafford would have been the way to go if they could get him. But I don't think that they would go any other way, because I believe once they signed Wilson and Winston, they figured they wanted somebody who was willing to sit a full year. And I think they did a lot of homework on him. I had heard that Dables had gone to the school. His son was attending the school, either a freshman or a sophomore. So they probably studied a little bit about his personality, the way he acts, you know. And I think that had a lot to do with it. I agree with you that it wasn't the first pick. It was probably the fourth pick of all. I don't think they ever really considered Milrow. I really don't.
I agree with you. I would disagree with them not, but I think that you're right. I agree with that.
Yeah. And the last thing, you know, even if they would have signed Rodgers, geez, we saw how that worked out here in New York. You know, I don't think that would have made sense at this time.
Yeah, I agree.
I think they figured, you know, and that's all. You know, the Jets could have drafted Bo Nix last year. Yeah. Right, they could have.
Yeah, they could have, they would have failed them. They failed everybody else.
And maybe that would have been a better move. They wouldn't be in this position where they're playing Fields now, who we don't know how limited he is.
You know, and by the way, Joe, it would have been the better move in 3 years when Bo Nix was no longer a Jet. He went to a different team, and he actually looked like he could play football. Yeah, I mean, you could say the Jets could have drafted Pettix last year. You think he would have done well with the Jets last year? No. Yeah, listen, you guys avoided disaster with Rodgers. Now, I'm a Rodgers guy, less than I used to be, because I don't like the way he just took a torch to the Jets building, because I don't believe him. I don't believe everything that he said. Like, I don't have to take him at his word for everything, and or anybody, really. And with that, and other things he said, some, I elect not to. That's his version. That's likely his version to make himself feel better, to soften the fall of being rejected. Again, by the way, by another team. Packers rejected him. He said the same thing about them. Jets rejected him. Said the same thing about him. You know, and we had Diana Rossini on yesterday, and this wasn't a report, although she's been around the Rodgers-Jets situation as much as anybody. She said something that stood out to me very much. Like, there's this, you know, all the Jets instructed Aaron Rodgers to fly across the country and then, you know, sit down. And 30 seconds later, they just... You know, they just dissed him and they harpooned him and it's over. Well, no, I never thought that happened anyway, but because of his mansion, which I think was $11 million, I've actually passed it a bunch. Sick. And I think, like Diana said, he was just flying back east to maybe tend to some matters to his home. And it was kind of along the lines of, hey, listen, you know, you're going to be in Jersey? All right, why don't you swing by? You know, let's get a chance to flush out some things and see where it takes us, you know? Man to man, let's talk. What are you thinking? Here's what we're thinking. Let's go. That's what I think happened. I don't think it was the way he positioned it. And it's not because I'm just blindly defending the Jets. I never defend the Jets. The Jets are largely indefensible. Although I do love what they did last night. Oh, God, I love it. they're going to start pounding people. Oh, man. You know, fourth and one. You just know Aaron Glenn, you know, a couple times early to set a physical tone for this team, even if they lose a game but win the war down the road to change the culture. You could take this to the bank. Like, within the first two games, they're on 38. Fourth and one, they're going for it. And with these five beasts up front, they're going to start getting that yard. I am really excited about the Jets O-line, really. How about that? I mean, the Jets O-line and the Giants O-line's coming together a little bit, too. But the Jets O-line, which has been abysmal forever, and it's coming. Joe's up in Massachusetts. Joe, what's happening, buddy?
Yeah, thanks, BT, for taking the call.
All right.
You touched on it. The process for the dart pick is what's killing me. So this regime is in win. They have to win this year. They're in year four now, and they have gone backwards, right? They were 9-7-1, 6-11, 3-14. Do you think they're surviving another year of not winning?
So yes. Yes.
That's my bigger problem.
I do. Like, but by the way, hold on, Joe. Let me answer. I do.
Well, they have to, because if they don't, then Mara is putting the situation again where, like, Dabble and Schoen came here where they were forced to use Daniel Jones. Mm-hmm. So if they don't win and then he fires them, their next regime would be forced to use Dart without even knowing if he – because I don't even know if Dart's going to play this year.
Yeah.
So this whole thing, to your point, the process has been absolutely a mess in my opinion.
Yeah, that's my only issue, Joe. I think some people are interpreting what I'm saying about, like, this Jackson Dart slander. No, I like the player. I like the young man. I like the prospect. I like the profile. I just don't understand the roadmap the Giants used to get him and to get there.
No. And I think Mara's comments at the end of the year saying they need to get the quarterback position figured out, it forced them. Because to your point, this was option, like, I don't know, five for them. They wanted Stafford. They flirted with Rodgers. They signed Wilson and Winston. Now Dart's here. Mm-hmm. It seems like they were going to do whatever they could to force a quarterback. And again, maybe Dart turns out to be a top five quarterback. Who knows? But to your point, the process has been absolutely abysmal, in my opinion, and I have no confidence in Schoen with the last three drafts he had.
Shane's draft was good last year. What do you mean? Now, I'm going to say this about John Mara. I don't know exactly what he's thinking. I kind of think that he owes Shane and Dable one. Like, you don't think that he shoved Daniel Jones down their throat? I do. And if they were to have a rough season in terms of just not a lot of wins in terms of sheer volume, and he fires them, then last night made no sense. Then it's just idiotic, which is why I strongly believe that they were alerted on to what. I'm not saying that it's written in a contract, but it was like, hey, it's a little bigger picture than you think. Like, don't just do it for your job security. Get us in the right space as a franchise. I think that's what happened. Nick is in Windsor Locks, Connecticut. Big Nick in the house. What up, buddy?
Hey, BT. How you doing, man?
Yo, what's up? I'm good.
Not much. I want to fix your confusion or try to talk about your confusion and the other guy that just called, the last caller, about the process.
What? Okay.
I understand the process of it, and here's what I think.
I do, too. I just don't agree with it, but go ahead.
When the season ended, I think their first target was to get a good veteran quarterback that when they draft the quarterback they want, he'll sit behind that guy for a full season, even into the second season.
Okay.
Their first option was clearly Matthew Stafford. But the Rams lied and stuck it to him and said, no, we actually want him. And they kept him. So then they pivoted.
Okay, but hold on. Now we're going to have a conversation. Nick, hold on. We're going to volley here. Because I think you're half right. Yeah, but I think that they looked at Stafford as a two- or a three-year guy for sure, which would preclude them from taking somebody last night and having him sit for 2 or 3 years. That would make no sense.
Well, I think that they do want whoever they draft to sit for 2 years.
No, not two.
Quarterback. You don't think?
No.
I think they're going to bring him in the second year during the season.
Absolutely.
I don't
they might bring him at the end of this year.
You think so?
Yeah, I think they could. Yeah.
I think Ward was their number one option, obviously, to draft, but I do believe that their second option to draft their next best quarterback that they love.
Yep.
And that's all that matters. I know we all have our own opinions on who we love, but
true.
It's all about who Shane and Dable loved. And I think they loved Jackson Dart for whatever reason.
Okay, but hold on a sec. But Nick,
there's so much negativity behind this.
Nick, it's not negative. But I'm going to push back on your usage of the word love. Like, the way you frame this, if they loved Jackson Dart, Why were they willing to move mountains and trade equity for Cam Ward?
Like I said, I think Ward was loved number one by them, and then they knew they couldn't get him.
All right, so they loved Ward and they liked Dart. Can we put it that way? Can we go there?
We could probably go there, okay. But I think Dart's going to end up being good.
I want to
be
so, man.
When I heard Gio this morning, I'm like, are you kidding me? Why are really the guy's just garbage? Or come on, we got to be positive until it's negative, right?
Well, no, I don't agree with that. Good call, Nick. Good spirit there. I don't agree that we have to be positive. I think we have to be who we are. You know, I don't know what Gio thinks about these players. I don't know. Although it seems like he doesn't like Jackson Dart. No, but it's not our job to be positive. Now, listen, myself, just pertaining to anything, I know it doesn't always sound this way. I prefer to skew a little more positively. I don't want to wake up and come in for 4 hours and every team stinks. Every draft pick that we make is going to fail. Every coach, although I've been getting on Tom Thibodeau a lot lately, and I stand by it. Every coach we have is not good enough. No, but our job is to tell you what we feel. I mean, and sometimes what we feel is wildly inaccurate in terms of as it plays out big picture. So that's just the game. That's the way it goes. All right. We got to have a little Volpe conversation here before we get back to this football stuff. Yanks have a real issue with Volpe. He's just not getting better. There's really no other way to frame it at this point. Like, I was just doing of course, you know he's hitting 198 and, you know, he's never on base. Like, you know that stuff. But I just want to see exactly, like, it just did a very basic dive this morning. I mean, his whiff rate and his K rate, he's in the 15th percentile. 15. I mean, that's like the kid in school who's bringing home 37s on tests. He's not even, forget about passing. He ain't even getting 50s. All right. And then I'll look at the sweet spot rate. 6th percentile. Man, I watch Volpe, and I think the biggest issue for me and the very frustrating part, I got to blame the Yankees a little bit on this. I have to. Yeah, I mean, he's in the box here, but I do not think they've helped him with this. He still doesn't know what kind of hitter he is. Like, his approach is all out of whack. Like, who are you? I got news for you. You're never going to be a home run hitter. Despite the fact that you swing from the heels every at bat, his approach stinks. There's nobody pulling for this kid more than me. When they drafted him out of Del Barton, I'm like, this is awesome. This kid, 25 miles more or less from where I live, a Jersey kid playing short. Oh my God, for the Yankees? Who grew up a Yankee? This is amazing. But there's an expiration point on that. And I'm getting near it. Like, I think the first step is you got to play him a little bit less. I'm not saying you send him to the minors. They'll never do that. I don't think they should because his defense is still good, whatever. I don't think it should be a rite of passage. I'm going to say this. Like, I don't think he's earned the right anymore to just roll up to the ballpark and know that he's in the batting order. I think it's got to be a little element of taking a little peek. You know, hey, am I in there today? I'm one for my last 20 with 7 punch-outs. Am I going today? You know, he's always playing. I think at the very least, the Yanks got to find, I mean, Peraza, Cabrera, night or two. I'm not saying it's a perfect answer, but can they be worse than him as a hitter? I think the biggest thing that hurt him was that he stepped into or stumbled upon 21 home runs as a rookie. I think that was the absolute worst thing that could happen to him. Because I think it kind of reshaped maybe in his mind and maybe organizationally who he could be. When I see Anthony Volpe, and I don't know how Anthony Volpe can't see this by now, let alone the Yankees with a million cameras and a million coaches dissecting every aspect of every swing that he's ever taken since the day he was drafted out of Del Barton. I don't know how he goes up there every single time. Swings from the heels. He still can't catch above average fastballs at the letters or above. And he still chases. And he still can't sniff laying off an outside slider. How is that not corrected by now? unless you're just not what we thought you were going to be, which, by the way, is entirely possible at this point. That's year three, man. You know, at first there was a hope, you know, and Witt was obviously very young at that point too, but the hope was, all right, you know, because you don't really know about intangibles when somebody's coming up. When Jeter was coming up in the minors, nobody raved about his intangibles. They talked about the fact that he made 50 errors early on as a shortstop in the minors, but then they lauded his approach and his attitude, and but his arm, but his speed, and all the other stuff. Like, it is year three. It is almost May. He's hitting 198. After hitting 209 his first year and 243, which at this point feels like Wade Boggs. Man, I don't, they're in a tough spot. They're in a tough spot here because they don't have any, seemingly, any other internal options right now. And he's not good enough, and he's not earned the right. Cashman earned the right. Every time I say that, I think about that rant. Brian Cashman has not earned the right to rebuild the Yankees. But Volpe has, just quite frankly, not earned the right to play every night. You know, his on-base percentage still below 30%. I mean, when's this going to happen, man? So I've long ago abandoned any hope that he's going to be like a Witt or a Gunnar Henderson or, you know, one of these young studs. I'm not even sure if he's going to be a functional hitter at this point. Because there's no evidence that says he's going to be. His average is always low. He's never on base enough. He's a strikeout machine. And he's wildly inconsistent. And I'll tell you, I was fooled a little bit. I thought the way he, and I remember talking to Aaron Boone about this. I was fooled by the way he swung the bat in October. And not just the grand slam that I was at that game. It was an awesome moment. But even his outs were loud. On the button. Right center field. Line drives. His approach stinks. His approach is ass backwards. It is broken. And by the way, so is Jazz's. But that's more on the Marlins than, I mean, the Yankees didn't draft Jazz. Like, I got to exonerate them a little bit, you know? I don't know. I really don't know. Hey, Hoff, let me pull you in here for a sec. All right? Objectively speaking, all right, because, you know, we do the whole Yankee method. I don't want that now. But you know, you follow baseball. You do the Rico. You watch baseball. You know baseball. What when you watch him play, what do you think this kid is?
I got to be honest, and you're gonna hate that.
No,
I say
No, I've
this.
Already said what I said.
If I'm a Yankee fan right now, I'm missing the fact that we let Gleyber Torres go.
Oh well, no, that I can't. What,
no,
can't
no,
less about
no,
Gleyber,
no,
Torres.
No, 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 because
I'll let you finish your thought. But forget
his
about Torres.
Bat in the lineup was more explosive than Volpe's has ever been.
I don't disagree with that. But it was time to move on. The energy, he's a better hitter than Volpe. I'm not going to fight you on that, no doubt. But, like, I guess what really has me worried here is that, like, this is now, how many games has he played? He's played
344.
Almost 350. He's had almost 1,300 at-bats. You know, another 1,400, 1,500 plate appearances. Like, I'm not saying that you should be a refined, polished gem at this point, but geez, can you show a modicum of progress?
Well, what was his numbers in the minor leagues that ever did they ever make you feel like he was going to be the next 20-20 type of hitter or 30-30 type of hitter? Like, that's my question. I know he had speed. That was something that was never not a part of his game, but like, show me where this kid was supposed to be that Bobby Witt type of player that you're referring to. Give me that, because I don't know if he ever was. And to be honest with you, if he's not going to do that, then his glove has to be perfect at shortstop. That's something that's got to happen. Like, he is not good enough at shortstop right now alone defensively that he should be playing every single game if he can't hit.
Yeah. I know you were on the phone. That's what I was saying. Like, I think it's no longer, you know, where he just gets out of his car, he pulls into the Yankee Stadium parking lot, and he's like, all right, where am I hitting tonight? I think it's at some point it's got to say, am I playing tonight? I'm okay with that. You know, like, I don't know. I thought maybe for a while, like, they ran him out there all the time. But I loved guys who play every day. That's why Lindor's every day and Pete's every day. And when Judge is not, you know, out for like months when he runs into a wall, plays every day. I love when you just play every day. And he plays every day. But I don't think I want him to play every day anymore. You know, and I thought that maybe part of his lack of progress was that, you know, he was getting run down, you know, adjusting to the rigors of Major League Baseball. I do think the COVID year hurt him. Remember, he was drafted in 2019, to your point about the minor. So he's drafted in 2019, doesn't do anything in, I think, 35 or 40 games in rookie ball. Hits like two something, didn't do much at all. A couple steals, couple of home runs, nothing nuts. But then he's all the 2020 out. But there's other players that went. He's not the only one that didn't play baseball because of COVID. You know, so I don't want to hear that. And then you get to 2021, and this is where I thought we had something. Now, it was still A-ball, but he was a first-round pick, and he's 19 or 20 at this point. Hits .302, leads the league in 35 with 35 extra base hits, you know, steals, hits some bombs. I'm like, okay, this is the player that they thought that they drafted. But really, since then, there's been no evidence of that continuing, and he's just not snapping out of it. It is a big problem. It is unavoidable. I don't doubt at some point this year, Anthony Volpe, some point maybe in May, is going to have a two-week binge where he goes 12 for 29 with five doubles, three bombs, and five steals and hit .320. I know. I'm sure he will. But then what's going to inevitably follow is a 2-for-30 skid or a 2-for-25 skid with 12 punch-outs because that's who he is. Yeah. And that's not good enough.
But what? Okay, at some point in time, though, you have to sit there and say, okay, he can't start every day, but like, hey, maybe we need to fine tune his swing. He can't do it here. He's going to go back to AAA.
Yeah, you know what's funny? I'm not going to send him to the minors. I don't know if they would be more open to that. I would not do that because there is value. Like if he was a deficient fielder, where he was just—I know he had a tough play the other night, couple tough. That was actually a spinner, and that should have been a hit, and it was. He hasn't been great this year defensively, and he doesn't have a great arm. But he is a reliable shortstop, and he can run.
Yeah, but again, like, is that what you really need right now? Is it just a now with the pitching? Yeah, you need to have reliable fielders. But you're also just trying to out-smash teams at times. He's not contributing in that aspect of it. I mean, at this point in time, you'd almost prefer to have like a guy, and I hate to say the guy's name, Jose Iglesias. He's not that good. He's a singles hitter, but his OPS is higher than Volpe's. His batting average is 100 points.
Yeah,
he's batting 298. He's not a good player, but he's a fantastic fielder. Yeah. So everything that you want out of Volpe defensively, Iglesias gives you that and more. Plus, he's getting on base.
I wanted the Yankees to sign Iglesias. I like him.
Minor league contract.
I know, dude. And you know, the funny thing is, like, Iglesias certainly hit more than Met fans thought he was going to hit last year. How many times have we said he set the all-time batting average at home for a Met ever? So, I mean, he did things nobody saw coming. But if you look at some of his other years, it's not crazy to say some of his averages Volpe will never touch. I'm not just talking about last year. So, I don't know what the answer is. I'm just merely pointing out a problem that's not getting better. And I generally try to come with solutions. I really do. Like, if it was the leadoff hitter, then I could say, drop him in the order. They've already done that. If, you know, he tweaked his approach this offseason. If they didn't do that, I could say, well, do that. They did it. Didn't work yet. I don't know what else you do. I don't know. I mean, I don't need to yell about this the rest of the show. But it's a bit of an issue here. Joey's in Westchester. Joey, BT, and Sal. What's up, Joe?
Hey, BT. Hey, guys. How you doing?
Okay, buddy. What's happening?
I agree with you 100% on Volpe. The thing that I noticed with him is he's super late on, like, especially high and inside fastballs.
Yes.
Like, and it's like, ridiculous. Like, the ball is, like, almost in the glove already by the time he's swinging. He's swinging through it.
I see it all the time. Joe, I mean, and I'm not talking about, like, 99. Like, you know, even mid-90s, which is kind of like early, low 90s, like it was back in the day when everybody was throwing 92, 93, rather than now where everybody's chasing triple digits. Like, he's late on a fastball. Like, here's the Volpe at bat. Fastball a little elevated that he fouls back or swings through. Then there's a slider and the other batter's box that he either takes for a strike or misses by a mile, and now it's 0-2, and you're dead.
I mean, that happened in the World Series against the Dodgers.
It happens every night.
Yeah. The other thing, though, I will say is if he can become a slightly above average hitter, he's worth it to keep on this roster.
I agree with that. I agree with that. Yes, I agree.
It's because of the defense, right? He's like a 3-4 win war player, right?
Yeah, his war was about, I think it was 3.5 or something like that last year. Yeah. Now, and by the way, Joey, if the average, thanks for the call, if the average can just get up to something that is passable, well, now his other trait, speed, can be unleashed. Like, this guy should be stealing 40 bags with the two engagements to first base and his jumps and his instincts and his straight point A to point B speed. If he hit 260 or 270, he might steal 50. Hey, you can't steal second if you're not on first. All right. And, you know, and we'll get a break here. But the Volpe stuff, I honestly don't. Now, there are many things, whether it's the dart stuff, the jet stuff, but, I mean, everything we do on the show. There's always a counterpoint or a real ability to disagree. I don't know how any Yankee fan that watches every Yankee game like me can remotely disagree with a word that I just said. I'll take it a step further. I would almost guarantee that right now, if the Yankees have WFAN on in there, whether it's Booty in the clubhouse or whatever it might be, they're sitting there shaking their heads. They know they got a problem. We could sit here all day and say, hey, he can run, he can pick it. Yeah, can you hit? Can you hit? Can you hit? Year three. Yankees have an issue with Volpe, as I dissected previous segment. The Giants and the draft Giants, Jets draft stuff from last night. Obviously, a couple of more rounds tonight. It's rounds two and round three from at 7. And then we get the, flush through a couple more rounds tomorrow. That's generally where you add some depth here. Knicks with a big win. Cat showed up like a demon. Gotta love it. And oh, yeah, by the way, you know, Brett Beatty getting sent down. I don't love the timing of it. Hoff, did you have an issue with that real quick, the timing of it? Yeah, I know you're not a huge Beatty guy, but...
Oh, no, I loved it. It was perfect. It was sending a message that, hey, you want to stay up here, you got to keep on doing this, so go down and get it done.
But that doesn't make any sense to me. Because if he was 1-for-20 and they sent him down, like, hey, you got to earn it, but if you got to keep doing it, but you don't give him the chance to keep doing it, that makes no sense.
Okay, but no, but there's no place for him to play right now. Here. So he's going to be sitting on the bench and just waiting around for a turn. Keep on hitting down in the minors. Keep on playing hard.
Yep.
And keep on working on your defense.
Like Vientos did a year ago. Yeah. Sent them down, yeah. Hit bombs.
And then come back up. I love it because there is no spot. I got to be honest. Luis Angel Acuna has earned to play second base, to play center field, to be first called up on a bench spot.
No, I'm not fighting you on that. So he looks good.
Brett Beatty has nowhere to be on this team right now except for the minors.
Yeah, I mean, I want to push back. When you lay it out like that, I actually think that you're right. I guess my fundamental issue is that kid finally starts hitting well. I think his OPS like 940.
Hey, what took you so long, bro? Oh, wow. We've been here for 3 years.
Yeah.
Dude, he had a full season under his belt basically before this. So you're telling me in the first month he was playing like crap, but in 6 games, all of a sudden we're going to change our mind and be like, oh, wait, he is good.
No. I understand. It's just when you turn around, you know, Zach Wheeler and smash your first bomb and you're on a nice little 5 or 6 game run, where your OPS is like 940. I'm just saying it's a tough pill to swallow in terms of being sent down. But, you know, from a logistics perspective, he's not a plus defender, can't run. You know, if he's not hitting, he's not bringing a whole lot to the table. So that's why I say when you lay it out like that, Acuna, even with the injury to Siri, you know, other things, you know, McNeil, they're going to maybe he play a little center, which I don't love. McNeil's obviously a professional bat, which I don't know where he is at this point. But I get it. I just fundamentally, a young kid who you've had some hopes for over the years, finally starts to flash a little bit, and you send them down. But I get it. I do. Jimmy's in Bordentown. BT and Sound on the Fan. Jim, what's going on, Jim?
What's going on, guys? Let's start with the good, which is the Knicks last night.
Yes.
Awesome win. Must win. One thing, if we're going to nitpick a little bit, and I think you brought it up earlier in the show, is Josh Hart is more than a negative on offense. And I love the guy, but they're not even guarding him. So
I know.
He's shrinking the court on everybody. And I want to see, if that's going to be the case, the big man lineup with Mitch and Cat,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion, brings more to the table than a negative Josh Hart.
Because
you can't guard both.
I don't think Josh Hart is a starter on a team that's going to go to a championship. I love him coming off the bench.
That's fair.
You know what I mean? But I know what you mean because you see it where it's one thing not to shoot, to be a little reluctant because you're not very good at it, but he catches the ball behind the circle and he automatically turns away from the rim where he is a complete, like he's not even trying to fool the Pistons into thinking he might shoot.
It's legit hot potato, and if
it
you
is.
Watch it,
it is.
When they're playing defense, he could be on the weak side of the court.
Yep.
His defender is on the other side of the paint playing a two-man on Cat or whoever's got the ball.
I see it, dude. You're
it's
not wrong.
Even close.
I know.
So, but let's go back to your point. We'll talk about the Yankees. Grew up in a baseball family, married into a baseball family,
nice.
Played my whole life.
Okay.
And I'm not saying that I can break down a swing better than the Yankees. That's not what I'm here to say. But in speaking with a family friend who works in the Pirates organization,
okay.
They talked about how for years there's been talk that the Yankees' low-level development has been terrible with hitters, and it's all about exit velo
yep.
and launch angle.
I've heard
there's
that, too.
No development.
I've heard that, too,
approach.
Jim. Yeah, I've heard that, too. Yep.
So,
yep.
And if you look at Volpe, to my eye, and I'm once again not going to say I'm better than the Yankees,
mm-hmm.
but his front side is gone.
Yep.
So, of course, he's late to every fastball, and of course he can't hit anything on the outside. But what happens is he gets a little bit of confidence because his approach gets changed, and then he gets this false sense of security, and then he goes right back to what he was doing.
Yeah.
And then it takes a whole month to get him out of it. But
yeah.
The same thing's going on with Chisholm, and they're not changing him either. So it's like it's at a certain point, is it the Yankees or is it the players? Because you're seeing it with multiple players. It's not just Volpe. Chisholm's mm-hmm. late to everything.
It could be both, Jim. Honestly, the answer could be both. That's a good call. That is a good call. It's a good take. I agree with everything you said. You can see his front shoulder flying open, clear as day. You do that a little bit, you're cooked on the outside black. You do it like he does, you have no chance. And you know, I've heard that, too, about what the Yankees at the lower levels emphasize. I've definitely heard that. I've had some conversations with people around the game. And one thing that I've consistently heard, now they're trying to get away from this, to their credit, they're trying to modify some stuff. But what I heard for a while was that, if there wasn't a pitch that you could elevate, okay, they were basically being instructed to not swing. And when you do that, okay, sometimes it's going to work out, then you do get the pitch to elevate and you crank it and you satisfy the exit velo and you hit a home run. Okay, fantastic. But when you let pitches that you can't necessarily elevate go, but they're strikes, well, now you're no longer in a position of power. So if I can't get under something, but I let it go, strike one. Now, advantage, boom, right to the pitcher. Now we could do a multitude of things, and I have less of a defense to what he's about to do. That's the essence of hitting. I mean, that's it in a nutshell. You want to be a good hitter? All right, you got to be blessed with certain hand-eye. Yeah, you're a good athlete. Oh, yeah, okay, fantastic. Differentiate a ball and a strike. Get an account where it's 1-0, 2-0, 3-0, 3-1. And I promise you will be a better hitter than the guy who is 0-1, 0-2, 1-2. Even 2-2 is dicey if no one's on base, So I don't know the answer in season. I just know that there is a problem, again, with Volpe. 888-808-1019, BT and Sal back on the Fan. We'll get the Giants dart calls. What do we expect today? Jets as well. Knicks last night. If you want to chime in on the Beatty stuff, you heard Hoff from his perspective. You heard mine as well. And, of course, the Volpe stuff. So we got an hour to go before it's Evan and Tiki coming up at 2 on the Fan.